Meng Hongwei is no longer the head of Interpol. The International Police Organization said this weekend that Meng had resigned. The news came shortly after China admitted that Meng, who vanished in China in September, was suspected of accepting bribes. His disappearance is one of many lately in China. Billionaires, Muslims, a movie star, and increasingly feminists. According to Leita Hong Fincher, feminism is having a moment in China, and that is deeply frightening to the Chinese government. Fincher is author of the book Betraying Big Brother, The Feminist Awakening in China. She says she hasn't seen a social movement this powerful since the Tiananmen Square protests of 1989. Hello, Leita.
Hello, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me here.
Nice to talk to you. Tell me first, the focus of the book is the Feminist Five. These are five young women in China who are at the core of your story. The theme that you present is the political is the personal. Give us examples of how among these five women, the personal became the foundation of their activism, and also who they are, what they did.
Right. So these five women became known as the Feminist Five after they were jailed in 2015 for planning to celebrate International Women's Day. And it wasn't just those five women. There were a lot of women in different cities across China who were planning to hand out stickers about sexual harassment on subways and buses. But before they even carried out their plan, the police in all of these Chinese cities just carried out a sweeping round of arrests and focused on the five women, the Feminist Five, brought them to Beijing and detained them for 37 days before there was a huge global outcry that resulted in their release.
Well, what were they being detained for? What had they done?
Well, this is what was so outrageous about it, because the authorities were kind of feeling around for something to charge them with. And in the end, it was something akin to disturbing the social order. But the reason why the arrest and jailing of these women just galvanized so many people in the feminist community inside China and globally is that it was just so outrageous, because all they wanted to do was to hand out stickers raising awareness about sexual harassment.
Okay, so I want to find out why that was such a threat to the government, just doing something like, you know, handing out stickers or making T-shirts and handing them out against sexual harassment. But first, what was the impetus for these particular women, the Feminist Five?
Among the Feminist Five, quite a few of them had suffered abuse in their personal lives while growing up. For example, Li Maizi herself spoke about quite severe physical violence at the hands of her father from a very early age, and her uncle. Some of the other activists had also encountered sexual abuse. And it wasn't just these five women. A lot of the women who have been involved in the women's rights movement have personally been victims of sexual assault or very severe domestic violence. And that has given these women an intense sense of personal commitment to fight back.
One of the Feminist Five, Wang Man, for instance, had to have a master's degree to teach high school, whereas men in China only need a bachelor's degree. You know, there will be some people who remember Mao Zedong's famous adage, women hold up half the sky, and his pronouncement decades ago that men and women in China are equal. Was that ever the case? And if so, what happened to that?
Yes. Well, I mean, in the early communist era, there were a lot of changes brought about for women because, I mean, even though women still had to assume the double burden of working in the workforce and then taking care of children and cooking in the home, the fact is that the Communist Party mobilized women and said that they assigned them jobs either in the cities or said that they had to go work in the fields. And so that brought women out of the confinements of the household. And so female labor force participation was really the highest in the world in the early communist era. And the propaganda, the rhetoric at the time was very much that women can do whatever men can do. And so even today, you see the legacy of that early communist era, because China's female labor force participation is still relatively high compared to a lot of other countries, although it's really falling dramatically with the onset of market reforms. But now, in the last couple of decades, you've seen a huge resurgence of gender inequality. As with the dismantling of the planned economy, so many women have been laid off relative to men. And the gender gap is rising exponentially in so many ways. And that's a big part of why this feminist movement has grown, is because of the dissatisfaction with this huge gender gap that women, you know, have to put themselves behind men. And so many young women today feel that that's really profoundly unfair.
What is the threat that the Chinese government feels?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is what is so fascinating, because on the face of it, I mean, what these women are doing is actually in line with the Chinese government's expressed belief in gender equality. But if you look at the bigger situation of China now, the economic growth, the economic miracle of the past few decades is basically over. So they're slowing economic growth. The workforce is shrinking and birth rates are falling, and the population is aging drastically. So the government has decided that it really needs to try to boost birth rates, and it's very aggressively pushing particularly educated young women into getting married and having more babies. But the message of feminism is completely opposite to what the Chinese government is trying to do, because these young feminists are telling other women, no, you don't have to get married. You don't have to have babies if you don't want to. But in many ways, I believe that sexism and misogyny and the subjugation of women, pushing women to return to these traditional roles of dutiful wife and mother, all of that is at the core of what I call China's patriarchal authoritarianism.
How is the Chinese government pushing that?
Well, I mean, it's doing a lot of different things. First of all, there's very aggressive propaganda that is telling women that they have to hurry up and get married and have babies before they turn 30. Otherwise, if they wait too long, then their babies will have birth defects. And so I've seen, for example, People's Daily articles, which is official Chinese state media, that women in college shouldn't wait to get pregnant. They should seize on their so-called best childbearing years, and they can have a baby or even two while they're still in college. So propaganda is a big part of it. But then there's also policies. Much publicized so-called one-child policy recently ended. So China officially now has a two-child policy. It's been encouraging or trying to push particularly Han Chinese couples to have two children. But in spite of this really dramatic policy change on population, the birth rates still fell last year. And this poses a huge crisis for the Chinese government as it looks to the future. And so there's this huge confrontation now between the agenda of the government, which is pushing a very traditional gender norm, pushing women into the home to become baby breeders on the one hand, but then you have this enormous upswelling of particularly educated young women who are pushing back in every way. And so what is unfolding right now is just an extraordinary moment in China's history. And the internet played a big role as well. More and more women went online and were sharing their stories
with
others.
But how could that work with all the censorship going on in China?
Well, this is what is so fascinating, because in spite of the intense internet censorship, which has become incredibly sophisticated, that these women they're so imaginative that they find ways of circulating their message and getting around the censorship. I mean, just to give one example, there was one activist who, when the hashtag MeToo was being very heavily censored, this one young woman came up with the idea of using emojis for rice and bunny, which is Me Too in Chinese, which sounds like Me Too. And so that was one way that they were able to get around the censorship for a while.
Until the government caught on.
Right. But then they're continually playing this game of cat and mouse and coming up with new ways to get around the censorship.
Could they have done this without the internet?
You know, I think it would have been very, very difficult. And so it goes to show you that just as much as the Chinese government has been very effective in controlling the free flow of information through heavy controls on the internet, that in this era of global connectivity, where there are also a lot of young Chinese people who leave China, maybe they're studying abroad or they've just graduated, they're working abroad, those people have free access to information, and they're constantly communicating individually with their friends back home. And so it's very, very hard for the government to completely shut that communication down.
Well, we appreciate your reporting on this. Leita Hong Fincher, author of a new book of nonfiction, Betraying Big Brother, The Feminist Awakening in China. Thank you very much, Leita.
Thank you so much for having me.